Attack Zone, Episode 7, The ABCs of BAC. Hello, Dice fans. You have stepped into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we're bringing you topics that we want to put forward so we can share our strengths for one another's improvement and bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn to address them. Joining me on the line, as always, Mr. JT, don't call me Homash, Homash.
How you doing?
How you doing, JT?
Good. And don't call me Homash. No, that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, we don't want
get
to
off my lawn
with a Latvian national champion or anything.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Yeah, Randy would be here, but he got lost Pokemon going. So hopefully, like a drowsy didn't put him to sleep or something. There were a lot of drowsies in his area. It was really remarkable visiting him recently. Drowsies everywhere. Today.
What's a Pokemon?
I don't know. It's a fantastical creature of some kind, which, speaking of fantastical creatures, we actually have one with us. The elusive, the exclusive, Oddball Narwhal himself. John, welcome to the Attack Zone. How are things?
Oh, things are great. I am so happy to be here.
I can hear the happiness in your voice. The elation is just palpable. You could cut it with a proverbial knife.
Or with a tusk. A horn. Yeah.
A horn. Yeah, a horn. Perfect. I love it. So you just revitalized the Reading the Rainbow series. So people who are listening should definitely check that out on the site. Can you talk just a little bit about what made you want to bring Reading the Rainbow back to the forefront?
Whenever I first started visiting the reserve pool 1,000 years ago, that was one of my favorite articles. I love rainbow drafts, and so I would wait for that article to happen every week. I was doing an article series at the time, up until just very recently, the Team Brew Switcheroo, and I decided that I'd kind of showed all the tricks that were up my sleeve with that, so I wanted to give the Reading the Rainbow a shot.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, it was really clear to me from the work you did on Team Brew Switcheroo that you really like to be creative within a very confined environment, so it's no wonder to me that the draft is something that you like a lot. Is that a fair assessment, or have I just been assuming the wrong things?
Oh, no, it's completely fair. Also, with draft, I don't have to worry about the bard, and I can not really have to make a plan. I can just fly by the seat of my pants.
That sounds good to me. Reading the Rainbow, can you remind everybody what day of the week that's going to drop each week?
That's going to be on Mondays. I try to get it on the site by 8:02 a.m. Eastern Time, which is 5 hours behind Greenwich Mean Time, of course.
I am so glad you are on here because we are going to get to laugh a whole lot. Folks, if you have not heard John before, he did do a spot on the reserve pool a couple months ago. He's our resident like lifter of spirits. You are Mr. Sunshine.
I would say a cut-up class clown.
Yeah, but in a way that we love. All right, so before moving on to today's topic, I would like to remind everyone, if you like this show, please give us a review on iTunes. It's going to help others find us. It gets the word out there. Of course, we don't advertise in any way, shape, or form. Everything is word of mouth, and we'd love to give you props for a review right here on the show. So stop by on iTunes or whatever podcatcher service you use. Please help us get the word out there, because getting the word out there is good. John, I know that you brought us a little bit of a treat today, a blast from the Attack Zone past. We have a six-pack today, don't we?
We sure do. I am so stoked for this.
All right, let's get to it. We'll go through the commons, uncommons, rares, and let's see what we like for our first pick in this imaginary draft.
Okay, now just keep in mind that we do not know what else is going to be in the rainbow. Normally, of course, when you look at your first 12 cards, you're going to know exactly how many dice are out there. So we're just going to pretend this is in a vacuum here. The first card I have is the common radioactive man, Gamma Rays. When Radioactive Man is KO'd by combat damage, deal 1 damage to all of the character dice. He's a 3-cost bolt with some pretty decent stats.
Yeah.
I'd have to say he's the favorite so far, wouldn't you?
I mean, like, right away, yeah. You know, the only thing I don't like is the stats on the level 3 face. Make it a little bit harder to KO with combat damage. But that being said, if you're attacking with 4, now you give your opponent the choice. Do I block and take damage, or do I not block and take damage?
Right. He's the kind of guy you're just going to keep sending every turn. You're not going to leave him in your field.
No, not at all. I really like this card. And plus, he belongs to my favorite affiliation, Bolty Bob.
Oh, Bolty Bob.
I do like that he's dual affiliated, so he works villains as well. You got to watch those dual affiliations. I think sometimes we don't put enough emphasis on them, but in draft, I think there's some nifty shenanigans with affiliations. So I do like that part.
I agree with that too. Yeah, this is a really strong start out of the gate. A really good common. What do we have next?
The next common we have is Jessica Jones Alias. She's a 3-cost fist. She has no text, though. She is pretty vanilla.
Yeah, especially if I'm looking at a three-cost bolt with a pretty decent ability here and a good fielding cost. There's no point in this Jessica Jones for first pick.
Well, the next one we're going to look at is Mary Jane Supermodel. While Mary Jane is active, when you field a character die with resistance, your Mary Jane character dice get +1 defense until end of turn. Now, she's a 2-cost mass, so 2-cost characters are great in draft, of course.
Yeah, I don't know. JT, what's your take on resistance in Civil War draft, especially?
Well, like, if she had resistance, I'd be okay with it. Like, but the point is, like, she's got to be active. Then you got to field something else with resistance to get an effect that only boosts Mary Jane dice by 1D. Like, I mean, a 2-cost is great to have a body, but beyond that, I don't like the ability.
Yeah, and John, I just did a quick search for on Retrobox for non-starter cards that have the resistance keyword, and at least half of these reference resistance, they don't even actually have the keyword. I think there's just one common, that Captain America. Baron Zemo's got it, Vibranium Shield, Winter Soldier, an uncommon, rare. That's just going to be really tough to trigger for not that much effect.
No, you're definitely right. I would consider taking her if it is down to her and the next card that I have, and that's it. But she's definitely not a first pick.
Alrighty.
Now, the next card I do have is Captain Marvel, Captain Carol Danvers. She's a 7-cost bolt, and she says Captain Marvel may only be blocked by bolt character dice and character dice with resistance.
So, yeah, no.
Yeah, no. 7-cost in draft is probably not a good idea.
Especially
unless
not for first
it has
pick.
Fabricate.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm with you there. This is not a good one.
Okay, so the next one we're looking at is Captain America. This is, of course, the common. 5-cost shield, man on the run. Resistance, while active, at the end of your turn, if a character die you control was KO'd this turn, you may KO target level 1 character die. And then while active, at the end of your turn, if none of your dice were KO'd this turn, you may KO target sidekick die. He's got a lot going on there.
He does. So my first shot at this card, and I guess I should have maybe said at the beginning, due to some issues with distribution and game stores around me not being great, more on them than any distributors, to be honest with you. I have yet to get Civil War. The local game store that's not so local anymore since we moved is I haven't been there to get it yet, but they have a feed waiting for me. So I'm kind of reacting here, and this is fun. What I see here is actually some ramp opportunity. I know it's a 5 shield, and his fielding cost isn't great, but if you have the opportunity to get some stuff in your prep area, or I think that's mostly what I would do with it, right? Because at the end of my turn, I'm probably not going to want to knock out something of my opponent's. But yeah, you actually have some opportunity for ramp here just by throwing something into prep. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but he's not a first pick.
Right. If if you're using something else that can KO dice, and maybe you're able to use his resistance ability to cycle a when fielded ability that on a character that happened to come up level 1, but really, if that was level 1 or level 2, it'd be a lot stronger. Even if it was even if it was restricted to your own character dice, you'd be able to cycle maybe some Winfielded. But I don't think that I've selected a common Captain America in any draft I've been in.
Now, the only time I might say he's worth picking first is if you see Moon Knight floating around. If you have Moon Knight, especially the uncommon, the Avatar of Khonshu, that may be something you might want to do because there's not going to be very many Captain America since he's a starter character.
Right. That's a good point there. The starter character status is a knock there, but he does work with Moon Knight. I would say that if right now Radioactive is still our leader in the clubhouse, Radioactive Man rather, if I was going to go with that, I would maybe take this Captain America on a wheel just because we know that we're going to be trying to get Radioactive Man knocked out. But I'd have to be sure that that's a strategy that I'm going with, and he'd have to wheel back to me for me to even consider it.
Yeah, and you've not even seen some of this other stuff yet. I don't know if he's going to get wheeled around. The next one we're looking at here is Nitro, Explosive Personality. He's a three-cost bolt. When Nitro is KO'd, KO target opposing character die with defense less than or equal to Nitro's defense.
Wow. Yeah. That's not a bad card. I think that there's some fun to be had with him that we have yet to see. Like, he's basically like Solomon Grundy light, in a sense. Right? Because it's limited to what his defense is. Not so hot on level 1, perhaps, but level 2, 3, you get better there. But we don't have an option like Blue Eyes White Dragon in this draft. I like the card. I think we're messing around with some KOs here. But I still think I like Radioactive Man better, because that's actually doing damage. This is good removal, though, and I'd have to think about it.
You got to remember, too, that there may be... I mean, there may be some enlistment that you run into, which will give you the option to KO him. So, I mean, frankly, I've seen players, buy a die that has an enlistment ability or some other ability that maybe doesn't really benefit them, and then get it in the field because they're looking for a body, and then realize, oh, wait, that actually benefits my opponent. So, if Nitro would wheel in this case, I think you'd definitely go for him. The common and uncommon are both great, so anytime you can pick up an extra die, it might be worthwhile.
Right, and enlistment really is a sucker bet in these drafts. You don't want to give your opponent the ability to KO things willy-nilly, I think is the technical term.
Yes, I think that's exactly it. That's what I say every day.
Now, we do have one more common left.
Okay.
And this is, I think, going to be the new leader, but I don't want to influence you or anything. But the last card here, the common, is Speedball, Robbie Baldwin, 4 bolt.
Oh.
Yeah. When Speedball is dealt combat damage, deal damage to each other character die equal to the amount of damage done to Speedball.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid die. I know that that's... that's performed well in many Civil War drafts, Speedball in general.
Yeah. There's no reason to take anything else so far.
Yeah, you see Speedball, you take Speedball, not just because you want to use them, but you do not want to go against them.
Exactly.
Yeah, especially this is an example of the power that the blocking player often has in Dice Masters, the inactive player, because, your opponent really has to consider what they're going to do, or they have to have a way to deal with that Speedball before they can safely declare an attack. Otherwise, they're just asking for an empty field for you next turn.
Well, exactly, and blocking characters with fast is the best. Right? Because then all of that happens and resolves before the rest of combat
anything else
damage.
Can. Yes. That's a fantastic point.
So far, I think Speedball, like we said, is in the lead, but we're going to the uncommons now. The first one I have is Namorita, Aquatic Beauty. When Namorita KOs a non-shield character die with combat damage, place the KO die in the used pile. She's good, but Speedball is so good.
Well, and her attack stats are 1-2-2, right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't really see the reason to take her. it's going to be tough for her to knock anything out, and you're already getting rid of an energy type there. I mean, that's not... It's not as bad as if she only affected shields versus not affecting shields. You know, there's still three other energy types out there, but nothing too impressive there.
Okay, well, we have the next uncommon, which is Songbird Screamy Mimi. She's a three-cost shield. When Songbird blocks, she takes no damage if another Songbird die is also blocking.
Only good if you get multiples.
Exactly, and that's... I mean, all you need is the one uncommon, but let's look. Are people likely to swallow up the common if they see here? The common, when Songbird blocks, you may pay shield to remove Songbird from the attack zone. That old chestnut. I believe we've seen similar abilities from the Atom and so forth. I don't know that anybody's really taking that unless they just want the cheap character, right? Because the Songbird common is a two-cost, and sometimes people will take those just because they're inexpensive, and in Songbird's case, also with a very inexpensive fielding cost.
Yeah, Songbird is one of those characters that's very hard to get two of a lot of times, mm-hmm. especially if you're in a smaller draft pod. It's going to become very difficult.
Yeah, because people are likely just to take the two cost. I mean, this isn't going to be something that I first pick, but even looking at it later in the draft as a consideration, I would be looking more for the common. I might take this just to have the die, so I have more low costs in hopes that I get the common. But as you say, people are going to swallow that up.
Well, let's move on to the rares then. I mean, it still looks like that Speedball is in the lead, right?
Yes, absolutely.
The first rare that we have is, once again, Namorita, New Warriors Founder. She's a three-cost shield. When Namorita blocks a non-shield character die, she captures that die until end of turn, unless your opponent spins that character die down one level.
You know, it would be serviceable if it wasn't for that last part, unless your opponent spins that character die down one level. I mean, Ultron Drone didn't have crazy attack stats, and yet you saw some fun things that could be done with Ultron Drone's ability and Hulk out, giving it Overcrush. In this case, that's just asking for not a lot of rewards since your opponent can just spin it down.
Right. I mean, if that last part wasn't on there and somebody attacked with Overcrush, you could block and capture it as long as it wasn't shield. And that would, you know, help out. But yeah, with that last bit on there, that kind of takes her down a notch.
Yeah, so still Speedball.
Yeah, still Speedball. We got two more rares left. One of them is Ms. Marvel, biggest fan. She's a six-cost shield. When Ms. Marvel attacks, spin all opposing character dice down one level.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an ability.
Yeah, it is printed on a card.
That's true. I think there are so many better six costs in this set. It's just not worth. I mean, if you need the rare, go ahead. But I don't think I would draft it to try and use it as a win condition.
Certainly not as a first pick. Spinning down one level doesn't do a whole lot. It can be difficult to build to those six costs in draft. And as you get to the most expensive characters, you start to look for that, as we've said before, dot, 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 and then I win. And she doesn't give you that.
So we have one more shot to knock Speedball off the top. Let's try Maria Hill, Tough Decisions. She's a three-cost shield. Maria Hill cannot attack. Enlistment. When fielded, she may attack this turn with plus one attack unless your opponent KOs a character die they control.
So we already talked about the dangers of enlistment, and I think that that makes this a poor choice.
Yeah, I wouldn't use it.
It tends to be a very poor decision to wall up in draft and not have a way to get up and over an opposing wall. And she doesn't really do that. She can only attack in certain conditions. She gives your opponent that KO fodder to maybe build up prep area or whatever else. I'll KO this sidekick. Or worse, I'll KO something that fires an ability like we already talked about. So, no. That's a long way of saying no. Speedball is the obvious choice. And if I didn't have Speedball, I would probably consider Radioactive Man.
You know, Look at from this angle, right? You're going to spend three with a shield on that character die that sits in the field and can block and can only attack the turn it's fielded. You know, who cares if it gets plus one, right? There are three cost actions like Blessing that give all your characters plus one, or Heroic right. Defense, which is even better. Like, I just don't like it.
She doesn't promote the right behaviors,
right?
And that's really what it comes down to. She's gonna sit there. I mean, I might let it sit there if I can, if I have a way to, if I'm playing against it. Then again, I might say, fine, knock it out, because I'll get to trigger some crazy KO engine and, haha.
Yeah, right. If you're going to go with Maria Hill in the Civil War draft, you want to go with the common. She can block any number of sidekicks, and that can shut down a uncommon Venom team because it keeps sidekicks in the field without letting them really do too much damage by being refielded.
Right, right. But yeah, I'm with... I think we're all consensus here, right? Speedball is the obvious choice.
Speedball. Oh, yeah.
No question. Speedball just does so much work in draft. Now, is there anything that you could see in the rainbow, John, that would make you think, actually, maybe something else would be a better option here?
Out of these 12 cards, probably not. The only thing that would get me close would be if there were a few Songbirds out there. If I mm-hmm. could be pretty sure, I would grab at least two. She's a very strong defensive character, but Speedball isn't just defensive. He it also sets you up to win, usually. Because yes. by the time your opponent decides they've got to come over, you're going to block, you're going to wipe out a field, and that's it.
Yeah, that's true. Awesome. Well, thank you for bringing us that six-pack today. I'm really glad that that was a great idea that you had. That was all John, and we're glad you did it.
Oh, I love it. I love six-pack.
Me too. So... That moves us to today's topic, which is still talking about draft. We call it the ABCs of BACs. And the reason that I brought this up, I think this is one of my weaker areas. As much as I love draft too, I get caught up in the theory of the set itself, right? Just like we do these six packs, we've done them before. We talk about the set. We talk about tier lists for the set and whatever else. But I don't think as much about the basic action cards that are involved. A lot of the time, I'll just take like a ramp global or two, or maybe a defensive global, unless there's some sort of obvious synergy that I'm building around. I don't know. Maybe I'm alone. How do you guys feel about basic action cards in draft right now? JT, I know you had some thoughts.
Yeah, I always start with ramp. And I, you know, I typically like to bring Shocking Grasp just because it's a... It can be removal of a low defense character on the opposing side, or it can be ramp with one of my sidekicks, and then I get the action as well, and so I like that one as opposed to globals, because you know your opponent has to think to buy it, and they gotta mm-hmm. you know, they gotta put some effort into going for it, but I even used it. In a game where, you know, the Common Justice was my win condition, right? Like, Common Justice, when New Warrior is a subtitle, when Justice attacks, if you control two or more sidekick character dice, he gets plus two attack. So, I didn't really care if I was knocking out my sidekicks, because early on, I'm just trying to ramp up, get a couple Justice dice out there, and I stop knocking out my sidekicks, and I try and use the energy side of that dice to pick up a closer, you know, a She-Hulk or a Deathlock or something along those lines. So I feel like starting with ramp is a good place to go, especially in the, you know, some of the more recent sets. There hasn't been quite the ramp that we've seen before, although. You know, I take that back. The Fabricate was pretty phenomenal. But start there and make sure I'm looking for ways to use my BACs in ways that benefit me that maybe my opponent isn't going to use against me.
I will say that you bring up Shock and Grasp, and I'll point Hulk out as another one that I like for the same reason. When you have cards like these, they're two costs. At worst, you're going to get two energy, as long as your team has a way to use it, at worst, you're going to get two energy, and at best, you're going to get an ability that you presumably took because it's useful for your team. And that's not a huge energy sink to buy and to get going there. You don't mind that that's not a character because it's not super expensive. Some of the basic actions, it's a little tough because they've not seen a lot of play in really any format whatsoever. And but sometimes there can be synergies there that you miss. So, you know, that's why we wanted to take some time with the guy who loves draft more than just about anyone else we know. And really that's saying something, to talk about this, which is really super important because it's the only part of draft that you aren't leaving up to variance because you're not drafting the basic actions. You know exactly what you have. We're going to also assume for the purposes of this conversation that you are playing draft where all basic action cards are available to you. You are not limited by set. I haven't played. I know some people do drafts in a different way. I personally have never played in a draft that did it with limited to in set. I don't know about you guys.
Well, I've tried I've done both. Yeah, I was going to say I've done both ways. The Rainbow Draft weekends that I'm going to be attending, they're all going to be limited in universe. So that's something to think about as well. But especially whenever you are not limited, that means you can spend a lot of time looking through your cards after you've drafted your team, just sitting there and everybody's drumming their fingertips against the table waiting for you to pick two basic actions. So that really opens it up.
It does. So you're sitting there and everyone's drumming their fingers waiting for you, as you said. What are you looking for?
Well, as JT said, the first thing I usually look for is ramp. It's going to depend on the team a lot, but it's kind of in this order. Ramp is the first thing. Direct damage, your power bolts, magic missiles, those are going to be the second thing. Ways to pump up your characters, preferably with energy that you know you're going to have a lot of. And then a defensive card. Now, obviously, you can't bring four different basic actions, but it is just going to depend on your team.
Right. So ramp, we'll put out a couple examples there. Obviously, we're talking about things like Resurrection and Villainous Pact. Have you ever tried anything like Gearing Up or anything like that? That's ramp that I don't prefer myself.
I used to hate those cards. I really did, but I'm starting to see the benefit of them. What I'm starting to realize, especially in the draft format when you may not have access to your big combos like using the ring from Faerun Under Siege to set up a nice Resurrection, is that Resurrection and Villainous Pact, they really just push a die forward. I mean, it is ramp, but you're spending one now to pay, you know, get the extra one later.
Whereas, it's a bank, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bank. So the other ones like the Gearing Up and the Nasty Plot, and what's that new one, Long Live the Resistance?
I think so.
No, that's the life gain one. Oh, the Superhero Registration Act. That's the one. I'm thinking of. Those will let you go ahead and have those extra dice. Now, it's really just going to be a personal preference. Do you want to save them and put them in prep for next turn, or do you want to roll them right now? That's really just going to depend on what you really want to do. But I'm starting to lean more towards using those cards because I found that a lot of people don't like them, and they're not going to buy them.
Interesting. The thing that's always taken me back from them is the energy investment into purchasing them in the first place. Perhaps that's because of the speed of some of the formats that I'm used to and that I've drafted probably more than just about any others. It felt like we had DC draft going on for some time, and you just got used to how quick those Firestorm Cheetah teams could be. So it didn't feel like you really had the opportunity. Plus, you had some good inset ramp with things like Red Tornado. I've always balked at the energy cost of, like, you know, Gearing Up is four, Superhero Reg Act is four, and things like that. Where do you find you're able to fit those in?
I think they're a good first or second purchase. I mean, that way you have the most benefit from them because you're having that cycle through your bag every time, the highest number of turns possible if you get it right at the beginning.
That's not a bad idea. I'm going to have to give that a shot. So already I have learned something. That is what the tags in is about, people.
Because yes. The ones that you get the dice and roll, you get one shot, and if you miss, then that's got to cycle again. If you use, Nasty Plot that puts them in your prep area? Great. So I rolled an action die that I paid four for to essentially get two resurrection globals.
You need to hit action twice to break even, in a sense. It's not exactly as clear-cut as that, but I see where you're going with it, JT.
And I'm not even sure you break even, because it takes up one of the four that you drew that turn. Like, I don't care for them. I'm not trying to say that they're not worth it. I just,
right.
If we're going to toss out our opinions and our preferences, those are mine, you know?
Sure.
Sure. And like I said, that's really what I had been doing. I several times now have brought Resurrection and Villainous Pact on the same team, because I knew I could go ahead and bank two dice every turn and just really get rolling. And I liked doing it, but I also gave that easy ability to my opponent. So anybody can use those two. So I'm trying to start to work with these types of ramp to see if they work a little bit better. And so far, I'm liking them.
Hmm.
Let me ask you this. Bringing Villainous Pact, have you ever been bitten by not drafting villains?
No, because I am extremely careful. I've seen other people get bitten by it. And so I do not want that to happen to me.
Yeah, just to for the interest of full disclosure, the people might be less familiar with the card text than they are the global. Your opponent chooses one non-villain character. All other non-villains cannot block this turn. So, that is a good point right there. If you are going to bring that for ramp, you better watch out that you actually have some villains, or you might want to look into something like Resurrection instead.
Right, and especially for sets like War of Light, since I think that's going to be one of the sets that we're going to be seeing the most of in Rainbow Draft Weekend, you might want to be careful, because villains are a lot less common, and so you don't want to get caught with your villainous pants down and having a bunch of people coming across and just slapping you in the face.
So is that what happened to Solomon Grundy's pants?
That is. Very nice.
It explains so much. Wow. All right, so that's an interesting take on the ramp that I didn't expect to hear necessarily. I'm still on the fence. I think you guys are like kind of like the angel and the devil on my shoulders, trying to pull me one way or the other. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to give one of these a shot, maybe. Maybe even just in some testing and some Daredevil draft or something like that, just to see how I feel.
I was just going to say, there's something that people that play with me week in and week out have heard me say before. And is this very important phrase to live by? You've got to risk it to get the biscuit. So I think that, you know, you want to go ahead and try something a little bit different, see if it works out better. I say do it. I maybe wouldn't recommend doing it when there are alt art cards on the line for prizes, but sure.
Yeah, hence during maybe a Daredevil on our weekly streams that we will soon be starting off. Cough, shameless plug, cough, cough. Okay, so any other comments on ramp, or shall we move forward to the next in the John arc of prioritization?
No, I think we covered ramp pretty well.
Okay. So direct damage, let me ask you this. Let me start off this way. First, I'm a little curious as to what all encompasses direct damage in your mind, because I'm very hesitant. I have seen many, many, many a draft game derailed by one person brings Magic Missile and they just shot themselves in the foot big time because they brought Magic Missile and the other person buys it up. And, you know, you play the Magic Missile minigame or the Powerbolt minigame or even both. And the game becomes about that. So are you talking about direct damage like those, or do you, how far do you go in terms of, you know, you're talking Fireball, DB Fireball, Delay Blast Fireball, that is. What are you looking for in this realm?
I'm really looking at both. To damage your opponent directly. That is really, really scary, though. It's almost a vicious struggle level of scary. So you're going to bring that. You are taking a big risk. And the other type, though, like you said, with the Fireball and Delayed Blast Fireball, that's also some nice direct damage because it's going to clear that field out. So when I talk about direct damage, I mean really both.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to clarify, because there are some people who I've heard discuss things like Hulk out, giving that overcrush as a form of direct damage, since, you know, ultimately the plan with that card is to get to the opponent's face. That's not really, that doesn't really follow a strict definition, but some people were very cavalier with the term, so I wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page first. So what's your, we know what direct damage does. I am super hesitant to bring it for the same things you just said about Fish's struggle. I don't know, man. You're going to have to bring me around on this one.
Well, it's not that I bring it that often, but I like knowing it's there, first of all. If my draft does not go my way, which happens a lot, it is certainly an idea. If you know that you have a really high cost and it's going to take you some energy to get to your characters that you actually need, bringing direct damage can be there to help you ramp up a little bit by buying those and also to put that threat onto your opponent.
Okay. Yeah, now from a, hey, this draft didn't go well perspective, I can certainly see that. But where do you go with, I think tangential with direct damage and not something that you mentioned, though, is a bit of removal, unless you're going to be talking about that with defense, because direct damage can certainly be used to remove characters, like we talked about with Fireball. But then you also have things like, for example, Crush Card Virus, which is, you know, knock out one of yours to knock out one of your opponents up to one level higher. Not strictly the same as direct damage here, but I mean, in general, what's your end game with direct damage if you brought it, like, say, not with a bad draft?
Well, with direct damage, one nice thing about it is, well, you've said this before, I think everybody knows this, that draft games a lot of times kind of devolve into two walls just staring at each other. Mm-hmm. So direct damage is going to be one way that you can, with very low risk to yourself, go ahead and start taking away that life if you have no other way to get through.
Right. Right.
But I would consider that to be removal. In fact, everything but my ramp, I consider character removal to be parts of those. Pump, you can certainly use that to remove characters. And defensive, like Crush Card, yeah, that certainly is another form of character removal.
Interesting. Okay. I think personally for me on this one, I would look for more removal purposes, whether it is through direct damage or through direct or just through being able to knock out something, than I would DD. I don't know. JT, where do you fall on bringing direct damage to draft?
If I've had a terrible draft, I didn't get anything I wanted, I didn't get any synergy, that's when I resort to like Dark Avenger and To the Rescue, or Trust a Friend, right? Like, bring a global to make a Bat Family, and then buy all the Dark Avengers and just ping away as much as I can ping. but those, that's for me, that's usually last resort. Like, if I bring a magic missile, I usually bring it for the global. I typically don't bring those, you know, the power bolt, the magic. I typically don't bring those to try and chip for life. I figure if we're going to end up in walls, then I'm going to trust the abilities of my characters, trust the draft strategy to overcome walls. Usually, it's not usually very good to end up having to go for magic missiles or power bolts. In my experience, that doesn't go well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I just...
Oh, I was ahead. Just going to say that whenever you're bringing those types of direct damage, you're really kind of putting a lot of that variance back into it. It's really making it an either-or, a coin flip, however you want to look at it. It's making it so that whoever buys the most of those really gains that quick advantage. It really changes the dynamic of every game you play for that entire draft.
Yeah. Absolutely true. So it can be high risk. It can be high reward, too. But I'm with JT. If I have a very bad team, and of course, John, you said this too, very bad team, I might look to this. Though I do like, and JT, I know you love these kinds of things too, the Dark Avenger stuff. That's it's fun. Of course, it just is available to your opponent, but they don't always see it in draft. So, all right, so pump globals. I like these a lot because this is where you can get into... So I hesitate to call these combat tricks, to borrow a term from Magic, because generally Magic, you have combat tricks because your opponent doesn't know what's in your hand. Everybody knows what's on the board in Dice Masters, but that being said, oh, hey, you're not going to block this one? Fine, I'll pump that one or whatever. You give your opponent nothing but bad decisions in certain cases. because whichever they're not blocking, great, that's the one I'm going to beef up.
Right, and it's not just for the global itself. A lot of times you can bring those cards like Enrage or Hulk out, and mm-hmm. you can really start doing some good stuff there. I think instead of pump, we should call them combat tricks. Because here I would put things like Dimension Door, and I would put things like...
Transfer Power?
Transfer Power would be yeah. a great one. Anything like that, any sort of those tricks that you can play. These seem to take a little bit of a, I don't know how to say it, a higher skill level than the direct damage cards, but they pay off so well, and it's such low risk to yourself.
I agree. Well, it's low risk as long as, and perhaps this is where the skill level comes in, it's low risk as long as you know that your team is built for this. I am definitely going to bring, if I'm drafting Age of Ultron, which some of you might draft at the Rainbow Draft weekend, I am definitely going to bring this if I'm doing, like, Ultron drones, right? I'm going to bring, like, a Hulk out or something like that. But I have to know that my team has to be one that's going to use these. Otherwise, like, I risk giving something very valuable to my opponent. If it's just there to be there, that's a risk. You have to know what you got. And, I mean, that sounds very obvious, but this is not one that I would bring just to bring the way that I might a ramp global. I have to have a specific purpose.
No, if I don't know what I'm going to bring, I'm picking the two highest cost basic actions I can find and slamming those down on the table thinking that they're not going to be a factor.
I've done that before. Before we had a Villainous Pact in the game, I would bring Resurrection and then something that I didn't think anybody would buy or use in any way, shape, or form.
Or you can bring pizza and hope they choke on it.
Has that worked for you? Is that an effective strategy?
I don't know yet. I brought Turtle Band from the most recent draft I was in when I should have brought Cloud Kill, and I paid for it. But yeah, I think next time I will bring pizza just to see what happens.
Like, do you mean actual pizza, or do you mean the basic action card pizza?
Both. I'm going to make them sluggish with the actual pizza, and then they're going to buy all three of the pizza basic actions, and I can build Johnny characters, and I win, baby.
That's fantastic. You heard it there, guys. This is Rainbow Draft Weekend 101, pizza. Love it.
I can't bring myself to do that.
I would never do that either, but it's... Well, actually, no, I would bring pizza, but I would probably want the pizza. Like, the actual pizza. This is confusing.
I
would bring actual
pizza.
Physical food pizza. Yeah, well, it's delicious. Who doesn't?
I really like Transfer Power. I really like Smash.
Yeah.
In this spot, like, because just so often, you know, someone's going for an Overcrush character or a Pump Global or, you know, what have you, and it's like, man, Smash just it messes with people because it, you know, it, at least in our scene, like, no one plays it very much. So I really like Smash. I really like Blink T.
Or the moving into
global.
Defensive.
I like, Blink Transmutation. Yeah. I really like the global, but I also like the action and you know, it's a two cost, so you can it doubles then as some combat tricks and direct damage. You know, especially if you know you're gonna wall, like, all right, let's dance. You know.
Well, a couple of those you brought up, JT, then do go into the defensive end. You know, you brought up Smash, and that's a card that I am likely to bring if I know I'm doing my direct damage and I really don't care about ever actually successfully damaging my opponent or the characters, then I'm good with that. And that's true in both constructed as well as draft. There are some direct damage teams that I've had that I've made sure that I put that I put Smash there, because like I'll put Smash and Distraction, and one way or the other, I have two types of energy that are just going to make your attacks not matter. I don't care about attacking so much because I'm working on like a Gobby thing or a Widow thing, or, you know, in DC, like a Cheetah kind of thing. Doesn't matter about my combat damage. So those are the times when I'm most likely to bring those, because otherwise you can pay for them.
Right. And one other nice one that I wanted to talk about with the pump is the Outsider.
Oh, please. Yeah, let's back up.
Well, with the Outsider on there, of course, that's the one where you draw the die from your bag, and if it's a villain die, field it on its level 2 side without paying its fielding costs. That's great, but the global pay a fist and target Billy gets plus two attack is fantastic, especially for a very villain-heavy set. Like, well, World's Finest, it's perfect for that set.
Yeah, and you know what I like about that compared to, I believe it's Cone of Cold, right, that has a similar global. It has to be a blocked attacker there. What I like here is that you are likely to benefit from it more than many of your opponents. Other people are going to have villains, but if you put that on your team, you're likely putting it there because you have your whole game plan is villains, and you're going to benefit from it more than your most of your opponents are able to.
Yeah, going back to Age of Ultron, if you're using the Ultron drones and Ultron, that is a great great card.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Man, I want to draft Age of Ultron again. Hey, I might get the chance. all right, anything else with Pump right now?
No, there's so many good ones in there, especially when Turtles came out and kind of gave us a few of the oldies again. We repackaged. There's so much good stuff in this way in the combat tricks.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that they use the Turtles sets to do those sorts of things and help us get some evergreen things and to introduce certain concepts to new players who enter in through that non-collectible means.
Oh, one other thing I did want to mention, actually, is Suffering and Satisfaction from Civil War. This one, you choose an affiliation, and the target character die with that affiliation gets plus two attack, and a different target character die with that affiliation gets minus two attack. And you can only use this action, of course, if there are two different characters with that affiliation in the field. You have a few different ways you can use that, both offensively and a little bit defensively. But if you know that you're going to be sending over your Thor and leave an Iron Man back, you can certainly give Thor two of Iron Man's attack to send him through. Or you can use it against your opponent and weaken one of his characters if they have the same one. And it's only a two cost. I don't see it being played a lot right now, so it's one that just kind of flies under the radar.
You know, and it's really interesting because tribalism is a big thing in just about every draft format that we've had so far, whether it's been, X-Men, Avengers, villains especially, of course, you know, Justice League, et cetera, et cetera. Those tribes with the affiliations have mattered so much, and it'll be really interesting to see what place Suffering and Satisfaction has going forward because, you know, while some of the teams have been focused on energy type, like Bolt, for example, Suffering and Satisfaction plays into those, you know, again, Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe some more Teen Titans coming up, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on and on. And that is a new tool that could be fun.
I cannot wait to go back and draft War of Light with this basic action.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's going to be so good.
I can't disagree with that at all. So then I guess that does bridge us into the defensive globals. I will just raise the point again to get us back into the conversation. These are ones that I'm bringing, especially if I don't care about whatever I'm defending against in my aspect of the game, whether it's combat damage and smash or other things like that, or, you know, I don't care about my attacks getting through and distraction and so forth.
Right, and defensive is also kind of a funny thing to call action since you're playing it whenever you're the active player. But, at least the actions themselves. But you're right, a lot of the distraction and anything that's going to keep damage from getting through to you is always a good idea.
Right, right. You know, again, as long as you don't care about that being used against you. Those are the primary times that I'll bring those, unless I think I'm going to have a way to just overwhelm my opponent and give them more than they can distract back, or I'm going to overcrush and give them more than they can smash with that global.
Right, because keep in mind, especially with drafts, you're putting this team together on the fly, and you've played a few games or will have played a few games with this. Your opponent is probably not going to play a few games with the same basic actions that you're really used to. So they're not going to be thinking as much about saving energy back for distraction as you will be. So you have to keep that sort of thing in mind. They've not been working on this team for a month or two and done 1,000 reps with it in practice. They are just as new with this team as you are.
And actually, that brings me to a point that I think kind of goes over all of these, especially if your store does team sheets with drafts. We do. I don't know about you guys, but we do fill out team sheets for drafts, partly for posterity, partly for ease of recording results and pairing and doing pairings and stuff like that. But another thing that you could do is if your store does team sheets, or you could encourage them to, or just ask people to take a quick picture of everything that they played, have a record of what was drafted. And like keep your team together and try it with some different basic actions going through. You know, maybe you weren't happy with what you did. You think the team itself is good. Change up the basic actions and see how that changes what it makes possible on your team. Because like you said, John, nobody gets a lot of experience with the team that they draft. And then after the draft, it's kind of done, right? If you can go back and try it again, or, you know, say, hey, to a friend, hey, I would like you to play this that this guy drafted and kind of give this a good look. And here's what he did and here's what he thought about because you played against it. And now take the chance to change something up with yours or just play it a little more and see if there's something that you missed and it could have been better or whatever. But give yourself more reps with the draft than your, you know, than the actual draft event would allow.
Right, exactly. I mean, one thing about draft, and this might just be because I like draft so much that I'm going to say this, but I think that all constructed teams begin life as a draft team. A lot of the best combos that you see were combos that people found while drafting. I'd say 90%. I'd say 1,000%.
Do you have any examples?
It's hard to disagree with that much confidence, right?
That is a lot of confidence, but I'd like to hear for the listener's sake an example or two just because.
Well, the big one that I can think of is one you've already mentioned actually a couple of times is with the Justice League, and that would mm-hmm. be with the Common Cheetah and Firestorm.
Right.
That was a beautiful combo. You go ahead and get Firestorm in the field, and then when you field Cheetah, you're doing damage for fielding a bolt, and then you're attacking with Cheetah and doing even more damage. If you throw in Blue Beetle, that also does the damage whenever you field a villain.
Yeah. Yeah, that was quite a fun team. I keep wishing for ways to see that one move into a constructed environment, but we have so much direct damage mitigation too right now that that's hard. Though currently to shift to constructed a little bit since you brought it up. Currently, despite the speed of things, it might still have a hard time, but we're not seeing a lot of Iron Fist and some of the other direct damage reduction that we were seeing because of how speedy things are. I don't think that necessarily leaves an opening for things like this, but it leaves an opening for something, not necessarily Cheetah.
Right, and I think eventually the meta is going to slow down again.
Yes.
A little bit, and whenever it does, you're going to see the resurgence of cards like this. And if you're looking at Little Cup right now, assuming it is a no-barred Little Cup or no-starter Little Cup, things like that Cheetah, Firestorm, Beetle combo really have a place.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, that's a really easy one for Little Cup. And something else that we would like to bring to the weekly stream, in fact, is some Little Cup stuff. That one is very dangerous, though it's a little easier to pull off when you have that Red Tornado uncommon. But that's just thinking inside the DC box. There are plenty of other cards out there that can give you some opportunities there.
I was having just fond memories of getting that Uncle Red Tornado in some Justice League drafts. That really threw some people off because that was a card. That's a good example of something you don't expect to be great when you're looking at it for constructed. And in draft, it is a killer.
Oh, it absolutely is. And that's where card evaluation, you have to frame it through multiple things. You have to frame it through, what about draft? What about constructed? You know, it's easy to look at just constructed, but look at draft, and then also look at for people who like to build decks different ways. If you listen to the reserve pool 2 weeks ago, Isaac touched upon the Timmy Johnny Spike mindset a little bit. And I think just about every card game does this. You design different cards for different people. Some people want to be really creative with something bad, or they just want to like get this big crazy character out. And if they do it one game, if they get this crazy 8-cost thing out one game and win with it, then they're happy. Even if that means they went, you know, 1-2 on the day. Or, you know, 1-3 or 1-5 even. People play different ways, except for Common Vixen. She is just the most compelling card for draft that's ever been printed.
And Ms. Marvel is the new Common Vixen, although I did win a game with her the other day. And hi, Joe. How are you doing if you're listening? I'm so sorry to bring it up again.
That's brutal.
You know, he can't even, like, rebut.
No, no, he can't.
Calling people out on a podcast?
That's terrible.
Well, I would never do
that. Actually, no, no, we've never. Or, like, to Randy's face when he's right there. Or, hi, Randy. How you doing, buddy?
Never mess with Isaac on a podcast.
Oh, gosh, no. Or Stuart, for that matter.
I think maybe I would only mess with Isaac on a podcast. Yeah. Have you seen that dude in real life?
Luckily, he's... but I'm 6'4". It's fine. No, he's strong.
Hashtag,
he's a strong fellow.
Hashtag gun show.
Oh, my gosh. So, defensive basic actions. I think, honestly... That's where they fall. Pick one of those if you're not sure about the other three, or maybe you already have a ramp and a little direct damage or some pump stuff doesn't work well for you. Take that if it meets an aspect that you don't care what happens with that. I would always bring a distraction when I was using Cheetah in draft because I wanted the option to... If I attack with her, my opponent's taking the damage. If they block... then I can maybe field again and trigger Firestorm. If they don't block, I could distract her back. If they distract her back, I've already done my damage, and so I don't really care, and you just saved a mask to do something that actually plays into my hands. So I had no care about including distraction with that team. But if it was a team that was much more combat-oriented, perhaps something like Black Manta, David, right, blocked but not knocked out, or... Perhaps the retaliation, there are some ways to knock things out, but outside of combat, but not a ton when you're just talking about draft. So it really depends on the type of team that you're playing. You got to be really careful when you're selecting those defensive ones.
You do, but I am going to say a couple of things that are just going to undercut this entire episode, if you're ready.
Do it.
Okay, the first thing is those four different types of basic actions that I listed, they're not really in any particular order. And I wouldn't really put too much stock into them. And here's why. Point number two, even if you pick the exact wrong basic action for your team, chances are it's not the end of the world, and you may still be able to win a few games. I mentioned that D&D draft I just had that I went 2-2 in. I should have brought Cloud Kill, but even not bringing it and even playing against four really great players, I still managed to win a couple of games. So even if you bring the wrong one, you're still going to have a great time with it.
And that's a great point. Don't put too much pressure on yourself, for sure. This is the time to experiment. This is the off season, as we talked about, really on the reserve pool and the attack zone in the last couple episodes. This is the time to experiment. Look for good technical play. If you brought the wrong thing, well, now you know how that basic action functions, and you can just kind of tick that off and think about it for next time. Or, those risks are how you're going to find new combos.
Exactly. And also remember that the rainbow drafts are the best time to make new friends because you're sitting in that draft pod before and you're joking with the guy you're sitting next to or the lady sitting across from you. You're joking about the crappy cards you're sending to them or the great stuff they sent you and make them think, oh my God, did I really send him something awesome? So you really want to do that and you make some good friends that way. And then you can work with those same people about, doing the reps and playing practice games for when you get to the quote unquote serious events with the constructed and everything.
That's a fantastic way to close out the draft conversation. I can't agree with any of that more. Don't forget the social aspects of the game as well, because it has to be worth coming together with people in the community. And that's really what makes it all fun at the end of the day. So,
yes, huzzah. Indeed.
Huzzah. All right, then. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Attack Zone. Thank you for listening. We do know that you can spend your time in many different ways, and we're truly thankful that you spend it with us. If you like what you're doing, please leave a review on iTunes. It helps us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network, production assistance from RJ Retro. Theme music, courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcast, The Reserve Pool, every Thursday. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Cheers.
Mazel tov.
I disagree. Not with the Mazel Tov thing, but with basic actions being the end of the world. This wasn't a draft, but one of our local guys brought the rare Bizarro, the one who has Overcrush and gets +2/+2 for every character that your every opposing character with a global. And I was running a Black Lanterns team. Six of my characters had globals.
Oh.
And so, like, on his lowest level, he's like 17/17 with Overcrush. and like, I won the role, and I went first, and I was like, all right, sweet. So I get Outsider and save a mask to ramp, and then I get another Outsider and I save a mask to ramp. And he went Bizarro on his second turn because he had all the energy for it. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to Outsider Aquaman right in, and he's going to lose it. Well, I missed on both Outsiders, and so I would have been hurting for certain, right? But the basic actions he brought, Distraction and Smash. I kid you not.
Oh, no.
So or hold on, because I was like, Bizarro, did he not did bring those?
I almost responded, and then I realized, wait, this is not, this is oddball. yeah, he did not bring him.
He did to not bring up to. No, you're right. You look at it constructed, you've really got to put some more thought into basic actions. But basic actions are hard. I mean, that's really, and I wish I would have said this during the podcast. They are just, it's the hardest
this
part.
This is staying
draft.
In.
Oh, yeah?
This is the after show. This is the sign off.
So this is like after Taz?
Yeah.
Do we have Chris Hardwick?
Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what. You were like, when we like are talking about this stuff, you were like, bam, down to business. Here are these things that I think about these actions, and here's some really good insight and analysis. And now, like, you just flip a switch, and this is fantastic. I love this.
It was all that time Chris I spent Hardwick. You do know I was a pro wrestling ring announcer and play-by-play guy for 6 months, so that's where this comes from.
That is some extensive experience, my friend.
I got kicked in the face by a ninja once. It was something. That's probably what's going on with me.
Whatever it takes, just keep it up.
Kicked in the face by a ninja?
Yes.
Like an ninja?
That like sounds so painful.
It does.
Yeah, it was pro wrestling. I made it look good. I mean, he did actually kick me, and he was like, man, you've made it look really good. I was like, well, it's because you kicked me. I don't know what you want me to do.
Wow. No, I actually did not know that about your background, but that actually makes some sense. Except I don't know if I can take any of this at face value.
Yeah. Hashtag every channel's wrestling channel.